You're listening to VFN TV highlights at VFNKB.com. Enjoy.
Larry Summers, who worked, I believe, for President Clinton and maybe even, yeah, President Clinton for sure.
And President Obama.
As the Secretary Treasurer. I'm Greg Lancaster. Joining me is John Ramos. And he's talking specifically, now he's a Harvard professor, and he's talking about universal basic income, which is basically cutting a check to every adult, basically, for a flat amount. Some of the amounts are talking about is $1,000 a month. And he's talking about the legitimacy of it. He's being interviewed by the New York Times, I believe, in L.A. or San Francisco. And he really brings it, you know, who would know better than Larry Summers, also in study in business. But let's hear his perspective on this before we talk too much about it. Take a look.
Question is, why am I negative on universal basic income? So one possibility is that I just lack imagination and that I'm wrong. And I always ask myself when I'm launching into an explanation of why something is a bad idea, that maybe if somebody had asked me about Social Security in 1933, I would have explained about all the disincentive effects and been worried. So I'm open to the possibility that I'm wrong. That said, I think there are two big things you have to think about with universal basic income. One is just the sheer cost. How big should the universal basic income be? Well, $10,000 per person doesn't seem like an immense number. $10,000 per person means $3.3 trillion for the United States. To finance that, you'd have to double every tax we collect, every tax the federal government collects. Just doesn't feel to me like doubling all the taxes, sending the top income tax rate to, 90%, before you get to state taxes, just doesn't feel to me like that's going to happen. And doesn't feel like it would be such a great thing if it did happen. They say, we'll do a smaller universal basic income, but, if you had a $3,000 universal basic income, it would only cost $1 trillion a year, and it would only be a $3,000 income on which nobody could live. So I think the first problem with it is just the sheer immensity of the cost. I think the second problem is I don't think it embodies the right values. Everything I know of the human experience, and I'm really stepping out of economics now, tells me that people derive satisfaction from vocation. And they derive satisfaction from working. And that a society that is designed to pay a large number of people for not working is going to be a very unhappy society. We can make visions, and Keynes had a vision of life a century, economic possibilities for our grandchildren. He wrote an essay in 1930 about the world in 2030. And he envisioned a world where people were only working 15 hours a day and spending a lot of time going to conferences like this and listening to concerts and writing music and doing and developing their skills as potters and painters and whatnot. The evidence is overwhelming that people who are not working and who are not taking care of children or taking care of someone are drinking beer, watching television, and not being unhappy. With the slight update on that, which is playing video games. But the evidence is that they are not happy, they are not satisfied, they are not healthy. And so I don't think of universal basic income, which is paying people not to work, as the right thing. I think of it in a different way. I think that I look at our society, and there is vast amounts of work to be done. There are millions of children who don't have the opportunity to play a game or a sport after school. There are millions of aged people who are lonely and who have no human contact. There are tens of thousands of school buildings across the United States with paint chipping off the walls. And so there's plenty of work that needs to be done. It may be that not all that work can be supported by a conventional for-profit business model in an effective way, and that we're going to need to find alternative models, perhaps alternative models involving the public sector, for supporting that work. But I would much rather think about how to provide employment opportunity for people who don't have employment opportunity, doing the vitally important work of our society, than I would writing people off by giving them checks. I think it's better for the people. I think it's better for the work they're able to contribute. And I think it's healthier for the unity of the society.
I was so encouraged to hear Larry Summers say that. And I think about, you know, Yang, Mr. Yang's running for president, one of the presidential candidates. He was interviewed by Ben Shapiro. And he talks about the UBI, Universal Basic Income. He's talking about the eventual coming of this data overtake where all of a sudden computers are replacing people because it's cheaper. And
which is coming.
It's coming.
I mean,
it's inevitable to happen. And it's happened again and again, but it's going to happen much quicker, much faster.
And coupled with 5G technology, hand in hand tangent.
Yeah,
that's
a whole other conversation. But yeah, but he said specifically in his book he writes about that men, you know, men will do this. This statistically is what he says in his book. If men don't work, they're not going to go out and volunteer in something. They'll actually drink beer. Hmm. They'll be on the internet for some strange reason, going through the internet and playing video games. That's the three things they do. And so that he's thinking that if you give him a UBI, universal basic income of $1,000 a month, then he'll look, it's not enough to live on. So he'll explore and start starting a business now because the pressure's not on him. Well, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, arguments in the context of that. But I think about what Larry Summers is saying. This is, you know, when you think about it, he's kind of reflecting what God says, because God's created us to find you know, significance in our work, value in our work. I mean, we're not what we do, but we find value in doing it. I think about Ecclesiastes. What does Ecclesiastes chapter 5 say?
Yep, verse 18. It says, enjoy your life's work. I have seen what is best for people here on earth. They should eat and drink and enjoy their work, because their life God has given them on earth is short. God gives some people the ability to enjoy the wealth and prosperity he gives them.
Well, that's very, very, very important.
As well as the ability to accept their state in life and enjoy their work. They do not worry about how short life is, because God keeps them busy with what they love to do.
They're not trying to look for the fountain of youth or anything. They're just like, just work.
Just work.
You know, be involved in something, volunteer.
Something that produces fruit out of your life.
Yeah, and you find value in that. And also, he says in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, I believe it is. Is it 5?
Mm-hmm.
Ecclesiastes 5, 18, 20.
Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him, for this is his lot.
Yeah, now I just want to encourage you. When we get back from this break, we're going to hear Ben Shapiro speaking specifically about universal basic income. But
that's
also,
right.
I'm going to ask you a question right now, because we want you to comment below or write to us at friendsatvfnkb.com. We want to hear your thoughts on a universal basic income. And what do you think about Larry Summers and what he said? And he's lining up what Ecclesiastes says. Ecclesiastes is written by Solomon, which was the wisest man who asked for wisdom from the creator of the universe. And God said, I'll give you wisdom. And this is very wise. You'll find every society, and of course, that's what Ben Shapiro is probably going to talk about, that they decline once you start paying them. Like Saudi Arabia, for example, mm-hmm. They pay what percentage of their people?
I think 30 million people live in Saudi Arabia, and only 8 million of them work. But everyone else gets free everything, subsidized,
so it's,
gas, everything.
Immediately it sounds good because you have like a cushion. You have some sort of thing, but will it actually drive the society that you're in down, and all of a sudden more governmental controls, and then brings you into place of mob rule, and just crazy things happen?
Well, the one who feeds you, takes care of you, does everything for you is the one that controls you, right?
And you start turning to government as God. That's what always tends to happen. instead of turning to God as God. God's got a lot more than government, because the only thing government has is what they take from you. They don't make money.
That's right.
And taxation, I mean, slavery is a tax rate. If you're taxed 50% of your income, you're 50% of a slave. If you don't believe me, don't pay that tax. Now, if you get taxed at 100% rate, you are 100% a slave. If you don't pay it, you're in trouble, which means you make money and 100% of it goes to the government. If you're 25% at a 25% tax rate, you're 25% a slave. You can find this out if you don't pay that 25%. They will actually come in and arrest you and do things that you wouldn't think is appropriate to you and take your stuff because they're going to pay that tax.
You cannot pay a lot of people, but IRS and some folks you can't. You have to pay.
So listen, we want to end slavery, get that tax rate down low, and freedom for all. As a matter of fact, capitalism has brought more people out of slavery, brought more people out of poverty, brought almost, I believe, a half of the world or significant billions of people out of poverty. In the last 20 years, I believe it is, Bill Gates said this. It's just powerful what's happening when God, we let God be the ones over the nation. So comment below. We'll hear comments on that and write to us at friends@vfnkb.com. Ben Shapiro talking about universal basic income. Can you imagine sending $1,000 to every single citizen? It's like Larry Summers says it would be doubling the taxes.
The tax rate.
Yeah. And Yang, the one running for president, he said that we'll have a value-added tax, which is everybody has to pay it, you know, which is kind of a fair tax because...
But removing income tax.
But removing, possibly removing income tax, I mean, progressively removing income tax and replacing all the food stamps and all that stuff with it, which is a pretty interesting argument. Mm-hmm. We've got to pay attention because, I mean, Ben Shapiro is going to talk to us here specifically what happens because it's been tried before, the Netherlands and other nations.
Canada.
So let's go listen to Ben Shapiro now about a universal basic income. Is it a good idea?
Guys, don't get violent, or they're going to blame me.
That was more controversial than being a liberal. My question is, a 2020 candidate named Andrew Yang has brought up a topic that's big now of universal basic income. And before you destroy it with facts and logic, my question about it is... Is everybody from Martin Luther King Jr. to Milton Friedman has advocated for some form of guaranteed income. And I think you can agree that usually when the government runs things that maybe they don't end up very good. So if more money was focused on going into the hands of people without restriction, would you be in favor of some form of universal basic income?
So there is a distinction between different types of universal basic income. Sometimes by universal basic income, people just mean that the government is going to sign a check in addition to the current means-tested welfare programs that exist. Sometimes they mean, like Milton Friedman meant, a negative income tax, meaning we get rid of all of the welfare system, and instead we just sign you a flat check. Right? And that flat check basically is going to be for whatever you want it to be for. You know, I think that the record of universal basic income has not been particularly successful. They tried it in Ontario. They had to stop it because it was incentivizing people not to work. They tried it in Norway. It was also not particularly effective. They had to stop it because it was incentivizing people to be unwilling to work. It's an idea that makes sense only under the supposition that there is a group of legitimate unemployables. And that seems to be the growing perception these days, is that technology is going to take over. There's going to be a permanent underclass of people who simply can't get a job. They're going to be sitting on their butt. They won't literally have a means to live unless we sign them a check. I'm pretty skeptical of that line of economic thought, because that's been said about virtually every major technological development in the history of mankind, is that a new technological development will put an enormous swath of people out of work. That is true temporarily. It is not true permanently. We have effectively permanent and full employment in the United States, under 4%. So the notion, and we have 7 million unfilled jobs right now, and people who are not filling them. So I don't really want to incentivize people to not go and get those jobs. If we ever reach the point where there is universal prosperity, to the point where there is no scarcity problem, where it's not a matter of redistributing finite resources, but a matter of resources are plentiful for everyone, then I think that you'll have, or we reach a point where there's a permanent group of unemployables, as we say, then I think that we'll have no choice but to look at something like universal basic income. I just don't think we're there yet.
I don't think we're there yet. A very intelligent man, very thinks things through very well. He's willing to change his view of an argument if it's different. And so you're talking about universal basic income that it just doesn't work. You know,
in the end,
in the end, it doesn't work. And that
sounds like a good idea, though.
For, it you does. Know,
I could see it.
But every government program always sounds like a good idea until it's
until
not
somebody
anymore.
Has to pay for it.
I think President Reagan said that it will never die. Once you birth something, no matter how small it is, in government, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger because people are looking for jobs and stability, mm-hmm. and they keep their program going and they bring in think tanks to how to keep that thing going because it represents a lot of income for some industries out there. But the thing about it is focusing really on how God's designed us to be. But what are your thoughts about Ben Shapiro? Comment below. What specifically, when he talked about the Netherlands not working, other nations not working, and that they may seem good at the beginning, but doesn't work out well, comment below. I want to hear your thoughts on that. But also, PragerU.
Prager University. Yeah. They're going to share with us and talk with us about this war on work. And it's so important because a lot of this can be taken in that way, that work is not seeing something that's encouraged anymore, and there's so many people on all different type of assistance, and they've proven that a lot of times this assistance doesn't work. But PragerU does an excellent job of explaining it. Take a look.
In 1965, President Lyndon Johnson famously declared a war on poverty. Half a century later, the poverty rate, the percentage of people the government declares to be living in poverty, has barely changed. Why? Are we not spending enough money? The federal government funds 126 separate anti-poverty programs. 72 of these provide benefits either directly or indirectly to individuals. The cost? $680 billion in 2013. Add in state and local government spending on poverty programs, another $280 billion. And the total comes to nearly $1 trillion. That's for 1 year. If just spending money was the solution, our poverty problem should be solved, but clearly it's not. We need a better answer. And that answer, upon a few moments of reflection, should be obvious. Work. Only 2.5% of Americans working full-time are, by government standards, considered poor. Given, then, that work is the road out of poverty, shouldn't we be doing everything we can to encourage people to get on that road? Of course we should. Unfortunately, however, we are doing just the opposite. Our welfare benefits are frequently so generous that they discourage people from working. We have created, perhaps with the best of intentions, what economists call a perverse incentive, in this case, against work. This is not to suggest that poor people are lazy. Most certainly aren't. But they also aren't stupid. In a recent study for the Cato Institute, we looked at what a typical family on welfare could receive in benefits and compared that to what that recipient would need to earn in wages to maintain the same income. Our study looked at a typical welfare family with two children under the age of 5. We assumed that this family receives benefits from the 7 most common welfare programs. Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF, a straight cash program, Medicaid, food stamps, Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program, or WIC, public housing vouchers, utilities assistance, and the Commodity Supplemental Food Program, or CSFP, which provides staples such as cheese, milk, canned vegetables, and other basic dietary items. Of course, not every welfare recipient gets all these benefits, but some get benefits from even more programs. With 72 programs involved, there is a buffet of options. For example, if our hypothetical family had children older than 5, they wouldn't receive benefits from Women's Infants and Children Program, WIC. Instead, they would get free school breakfasts and lunches. Our study found that the value of these benefits varied from a low of $16,984 in Mississippi to an astonishing high of $49,175 in Hawaii. And keep this in mind, welfare benefits are not taxed while wages are. That means that in many states, welfare recipients would have to earn even more by working than they receive in benefits for not working in order to come out even. In fact, taking taxes into account, in 33 states, a welfare recipient would receive more income through benefits than a worker could from working full-time at a minimum wage job. In 13 states, a mother on welfare with 2 children would receive more in benefits than by earning $15 per hour at a job. And in the 8 most generous states, she could get more in benefits than by working at a $25 per hour job. And that's without having to get to a place of business at a specific time, having to work 8 hours, or deal with a boss and fellow employees. But don't people who receive many of these benefits have to be working in some capacity or at least actively searching for work? Not really. In 2009, work requirements, the centerpiece of the Republican Congress Clinton Administration Welfare Reform Bill of 1996, were severely eroded. Nationwide, fewer than 42% of recipients are participating in what are called work activities. In some states, such as Missouri and Massachusetts, fewer than 1 out of 5 welfare recipients are working. And that uses a very broad definition of work activity. Going to college can be considered work. Job training can be considered work. Even just looking for work can be considered work. Yet less than half of welfare recipients meet even these definitions. Many poor people are making what would seem to be a rational economic decision by not working. It's pretty simple. If welfare pays better than work, why choose to work? But in the long run, that tempting choice is a bad one, because it will end up keeping those in the welfare system trapped in poverty. Only working for wages, even minimum wages, or marrying someone who works, puts you on a path out of poverty. If we are serious about reducing welfare dependency and helping Americans climb out of poverty, we need to establish a clear policy preference for work over welfare. But our current welfare benefits are so generous that not working too often seems like a better deal. It is no wonder, then, that even after 50 years of trying, we are still losing the war on poverty. I'm Michael Tanner of the Cato Institute for Prager University.
Wow, it's so important. Think about it. These three things, if you do these three things and encourage people to do these three things, they'll be in the highest percentile of not being in poverty. One is at least finish high school. Second one is get a full-time job. And the third is wait until you're at least 21 to get married and to have children and be married when you have children.
Yeah.
And you're in the highest percentile of people who are not in poverty. It's kind of like following God's plan for family and marriage.
Yeah.
Man, if we put God in the center of our life, He's for us.
That's right.
And not against us.
And you'll be blessed.
You'll be blessed. Listen, comment below. We want to hear your thoughts. What are your thoughts about these three things? One is
finish high school.
At least finish high school. Get a full-time job. And the third is wait till you're 21 before you get married and get married before you have children. You're not going to be in a place of poverty. Comment below. I want to hear your thoughts on that. Also, write to us at friends@vfnkb.com. We love to hear what you're thinking, and so does the community. And be sure to comment on each other's thoughts, because we get another dialogue going.
That's
about
right. Perspective.
Anyway, yeah, I want to pray with you right now. Father God, I just pray a blessing over our audience. God, I thank you for each and every one. Lord, I pray a blessing over revelation about what's coming up, where they're going to present things like universal basic income and what you say about it, Lord, so that our nation would live and our people would be blessed and not in poverty, God. And I just pray a blessing over our folks, God. Lord, and we ask you right now, God, end abortion, send revival, send a third grade awakening, we pray, in Jesus' name. And don't forget how easy it is. Love God, love others, and lead others to do the same. God bless.
You've just been listening to the highlights from the VFN TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at vfnkb.com. And don't forget about our VFNKB app. No matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share it with your friends. Connect and sign up for the next webinar or attend our next summit at vfnkb.com. VFN TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light.